Hey, it's Julio Ricardo Varela, Latino Rebels Radio. We're still on holiday break, but don't worry, because our producer, Oscar Fernandez, also produces his own show out of Washington, D.C., called the Latino Media Collective. And if you're a fan of Latino Rebels Radio, you would know that Oscar has sort of been the sixth Beatle, or the fifth Beatle, the guest host of Latino Rebels Radio. He's been doing it for years for me. He actually said, let me feature the Latino Media Collective. I'm like, hell yeah. So we're going to feature Oscar with another show out of DC. Fabulous show, Latino Media Collective. And in this one, Oscar takes us to Paraguay to talk about Black Lives Matter in a country of Latin America that a lot of people don't follow. Let's just say that. Or as they say in English, Paraguay. So anyway, here is the Latino Media Collective on Latino Rebels Radio.
Greetings, y bienvenidos a todo mi gente escuchando in Washington and all points beyond. This is Oscar Fernandez, and you're listening to Latino Media Collective, recorded at the studios of WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington, in District of Columbia, here on this Friday, December 3rd, 2021. You can also check us out on our website, which is latinomediacollective.com. You can follow us on Twitter under the name at LMC underscore show. That is at LMC underscore show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez, and today on the show, we put the spotlight on Paraguay as we examine one of the least known and least documented Afro-descendant communities in all of Latin America. And we're joined today by Valencia Wilson, who joins us via Skype from Colombia. Welcome to the show, Valencia Wilson.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you with us today. I usually introduce the guests on the show and tell them what they're all about and what articles they've written. But today is quite unique because we are talking again about one of the least known Afro-descendant communities in all of Latin America, and that's the Afro-Paraguayan community. And so let me just start off, because there's so little known about them. Can you tell us, first of all, a little bit about yourself and sort of what drove you to this particular topic? Because I think I told you through our correspondence via email. I've been trying to do a show on Afro-Paraguayans for years, but I could not find a definitive article, a definitive person to speak to about this. So I'm curious to know, in addition to telling us a little bit about yourself, how did you get the ball rolling on such a difficult subject?
Sure. No, first I can speak a little bit about myself. I grew up outside of the DC area in Northern Virginia, and thankfully from a very young age, I was able to travel extensively throughout the hemisphere. And recently I finished my master's degree in Latin American studies at Georgetown University down the street. And as you mentioned before, I'm currently in Bogota at the moment. And the thing with Paraguay, as you mentioned, that there's such a dearth of information, particularly on the Afro-Paraguayan community. And what started this and drove this article was just a spur of the moment trip. Actually, in 2019, I was already in Bogota doing a fellowship as part of my grad school program. And I decided to take a trip and meet up with a friend's family. And now they're quite like family in Paraguay. And much of our discussions were around Paraguay in general. The family there's three of them, right? There's the husband whom I know, and he introduced me to his wife, who is Guarani, and they have a small child. And our discussions simply revolved around the issues that the Guarani and the Afro-Paraguayans face. But then we diverged and we discussed about how you're able to hear about Guarani, right? You go to a website, a Paraguayan website, and it's in two languages. It's in Guarani and it's in Spanish, but you don't hear anything about the Afro-Paraguayan community, nor their voices. So, you know, I think it's fair to say that we hear of Afro-Latino and Afro-Latina voices throughout the Americas, but Afro-Paraguayans, you just hear nothing. And throughout that time I spent with them, it was trying to understand the community, understand if there was literature in the beginning, and if there was literature, how far back dated it was, and to see if I could grasp the struggles and not only the struggles, just the successes. And that's what I was aiming towards doing in the article that I wrote, particularly for Latin Americanists, such as yourself and myself, and also for those who are outside of, you know, who don't typically focus in Latin America. I wanted to bring awareness to this in a very simple and easy to understand, So that's just a little bit about myself and what drove my initial interest.
Absolutely. And I should point out that, like I said before, there's very little documentation about this community, but you did write an article for Latin American Perspectives entitled Afrodescendientes in Paraguay, the 209-year struggle for recognition. And that sort of segues into my next question. And you sort of alluded to this already, but I wonder if you could elaborate on your central argument in this article about Afro-Paraguayans, quote, fighting an uphill legislative battle for Paraguay to acknowledge that they exist. We've sort of seen the same problem in other parts of Latin America, such as Honduras and Nicaragua and other communities that have small but significant Afro-descendant communities. So how is it unique, or how is it different per se in Paraguay?
I think some of the primary issues that I noticed was number one, when I was looking at, you know, I guess you could say that the population as a whole, you know, the first thing I noticed was that there was somewhat of a recognition that on the 6th of January, there was a big festival highlighting Afro-Paraguayans. However, that is more of a social context, but within the laws and statutes within Paraguay, there is no mentioning of the Paraguayans, their contributions, their legacy, how they've contributed to what you see as Paraguay today. And I started to dig a bit more into, if there was a legislative battle, what are they currently trying to introduce to their Congress or their diputados and their Senate? And, you know, the centrality of my argument is that, you know, despite having this one day saying, We have Afro-Paraguayans that acknowledges their existence for that one day. There are no concrete laws that protect Afro-Paraguayans, and in largely their racial discrimination, they face stigma, general prejudice. So it was a bit of a contrast. And the reason I say it's currently it is an uphill legislative battle is that they are trying to push a bill, and we can talk about that a bit later, towards just simply acknowledging the fact that they exist and that they should be weaved into the cultural discussions, both formally in the sense of education and socially, in addition to that January 6th day, and that through that, perhaps, that it would allow a potential increase in job opportunities and collective thought or rethinking strategies of how you teach your society, but also children, about race in Paraguay, and how they've contributed to the overall fabric of Paraguay. So that was just the initial, the centrality of my argument, and to juxtapose what you see, but in reality, what's concrete in law, and in this case, what is not in the legal arena.
Exactly. What you just mentioned is sort of very consistent with some of the challenges that other Afro-descendant communities in various other parts of Latin America have dealt with in one form or another. At the same time, though, we are talking about Paraguay after all. And one thing I've learned over the years in doing almost any program on Paraguay is that this country plays by its own set of rules. And as an example of Paraguay's sort of bizarre history as it pertains to Afro-descendants, can you tell us about El Supremo, José Francia's complicated history as it pertains to race? Because I know a little bit about El Supremo Francia, Paraguay, and I think to myself, in any other country, he would be a clear-cut example of a dictator. But yet again, Paraguay is playing by its own set of rules here, and he has a very complicated history as it pertains to race. Things are not as black and white in Paraguay as they probably would be in other countries, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's what I found so fascinating about Paraguay. You know, as you mentioned, it's its own arena, it's its own realm. And when we talk about Supremo, Dr. José Gaspar de Francia, is that he was essentially, if we look back in the 1800s, he was a spokesman for the separatist or nationalist movement in Paraguay. But he also understood at that time that he needed to appeal to a variety of people. So he tried to cultivate a certain mestizo culture. And as we know, the mestizo is the European and the indigenous, but he ultimately wanted to reject that European identity. So that initially is what strikes people as, and myself as well, as okay, this is a very interesting topic, but you know, to create, in his mind, in order to create this, and I use this in my article, this genetic revolution, he started to downplay the use of Spanish and instead uplifting Guarani, which is the language that the Guarani speak in Paraguay. And the most controversial, or depending on how you look at it, controversial or revolutionary, was that if we're looking at race and the marriage laws he enacted, he simply put a decree and said, if you are a Spaniard, you can only legally marry a woman that is legally classified as indigenous, mulata, or negra. And because he went so far in these decrees, and it was in 1860 that he decided that these decrees would help construct a Paraguayan society that diminishes your European identity, he actually carries out some of those, his decrees, by imprisoning priests who, in his mind, had the audacity to marry Europeans together. And he tried to, the way we could phrase it is he tried to brown in the population,
yeah,
as opposed to whitening the population, right? And most of our discussions outside of Paraguay is about whitening the population. The marriage laws, you know, that are much different from what you see in Paraguay. But his was quite, it was actually inverted. And this happened for 26 years. Now, granted, 26 years is not a long time, but it's significant enough and distinct enough that one could look at this and say, well, clearly he was trying to propose a genetic revolution, and which is the term that I use in the article itself. And he succeeded in that, and for 26 years. So his marriage flaws were quite, it's somewhat extraordinary, but also strange in that time, if we look at the historical context of the Americas.
Okay, yeah, strange is the best way to describe it. I mean, there's no other way around it because, you know, history will show us that there are places like the Dominican Republic and El Salvador that ban interracial marriage. Paraguay is an example of banning same-race marriage. And even now, as you explain it, it's still, I don't know how to take it. I don't know how to approach it. And it's such a bizarre thing that we don't see it that very often. And at the same time, though, I think this probably lends itself as to why there's very little documentation of the Afro-descendant community in Paraguay. But there are sort of bits and pieces of history that are, as we just mentioned, sort of strange. And I guess another example we could point to is the case of, or perhaps you could tell us, who was José Artigas and the Banda Oriental during this period, this strange period in Paraguayan history.
Absolutely. And yes, I have not found another word outside of strange for those laws. And to discuss a bit about José Artigas, if we look back historically, and I won't go into too far into the history, but essentially if you think of Artigas, he's the father of Uruguayan independence. And if we're talking about Artigas had his Banda Oriental. And at that time, the Banda Oriental was a massive piece of land. It was initially the name of the South American territory is like east of the Uruguayan River, but north of the Rio de la Plata. And then it also essentially is what we now consider as Uruguay. It's quite simple. You know, there are some parts of it in Rio Grande do Sul in Brazil, which is now Brazil, and other parts of Santa Catarina. But essentially, José Artigas plays a very interesting part. And I referenced him in my article because he had essentially an army, we can call them rebels, just simply a rebels, of which 200 of them and his men, and now we could say presumably there are more, but for the sake of the discussion and what little information I could find, 200 was the standard number. And those were former slaves, they were Afro-Latinos, and he consistently decided to escape towards Paraguay. And as a way to evade constant persecution. And this is where the asylum laws came into play. And, you know, he decided to continuously cross into Paraguay because that was a safe relative to other areas like Argentina, Brazil. It was a safe area for the slaves to be because it also lent itself well to El Supremo's idea of having diminishing the European identity and boosting anyone else, indigenous, former slaves, freed slaves, et cetera. So that is how Artigas came in and decided to use Paraguay as an asylum state. And it's quite interesting because 200 of those men decided to settle in a community in Paraguay called Tambacua, and of which they are descendants of those same Black Lancers that fled to Paraguay with Artigas. So it's quite an interesting story and development of Paraguay being an asylum state, but also welcomed by El Supremo.
Yeah, we'll get to Tambacua in a second, but I just want to say that when I read this part of your article, it made me realize that, oh, you know what? When it comes to the slave trade in Latin America, Paraguay is almost non-existent in the narrative or in the discussion. Neighboring Brazil has a huge and dark history when it comes to the slave trade, as does Uruguay and Argentina to various degrees. But Paraguay is almost non-existent. So I don't know how much you could elaborate a little bit more on this, because there were some asylum laws in effect during this period. Was this something to the benefit of Afro-descendants, or was this something that was just exclusive to José Artigas and the Banda Oriental?
No, actually, it wasn't exclusive to Artigas. And you know, I had mentioned that I didn't find, you know, there's just relative to other areas in Latin America, Paraguay consists of a small amount of sources, but he allowed his borders to be open to those who decided to flee. Many of the former slaves left from Brazil to go to Paraguay, and there was documentation within Hoyt Williams and another dissertation that I had reviewed and analyzed that there were historical accounts of slaves running to Paraguay, and at once they were at the border of Paraguay, they were granted essentially asylum, while those who were, you know, plantation owners and those who were trying to catch slaves, they would approach Paraguay, provide documentation that these are the slaves that I need to find. They were essentially El Supremo instructed his government and his forces around the frontier to reject those claims, and that this is an independent nation, or this is a dependent area of Paraguay, and they are not allowed to enter, and that the slaves would be provided liberty and freedom. So it was, you know, Artigas was not the only instance. There were other instances of just being a refuge relative to other areas, like your Argentinas, your Brazils, et cetera. So it's quite an interesting story, and it was also fascinating that I was unable to discover a lot more resources and just sources in general, despite how different it is relative to the rest of the Americas. Because you would naturally think that this was such a phenomenon that it would be written about more, but the documentation is rather scarce. But that was at least some of the sources that I did find, that I found that it was not solely limited to José Artigas and the Banda Oriental.
Not only that, but I would definitely love to learn more, because based on what you just said, one would assume that if this were the case as it pertains to the asylum laws, that there would be a much more sizable Afro-descendant community in Paraguay than what we know right now. So that's another head scratcher and another example of how Paraguay sort of plays by its own rules here. Now let's get to the story of Cambacua, if we could, because if anyone ever Googles Afro-Paraguayans, this is one of the first things that comes up, Cambacua, the community of Cambacua. So I wonder if you could tell us about this community, because it's so central to anyone who even tries to do some sort of research with regards to this community in Paraguay.
Correct. And that was one of the most fascinating things that I was able to discuss when I was there, was just, you know, explain, you know, in my, you know, research, it was explained to me what Cambacua is for those Afro-Paraguayans that live there. And the unanimous discussion points were just Camba refers to the Afro-Paraguayan community, and that they trace their ancestry back to Kenya. So we talk about the slave trade, but that's where they trace their ancestry back to. And much of them, as they arrived in Paraguay, they're all over Paraguay, but truly in Cambacua, Cambacoque, and San Agustín de Emboscada de los Pueblos Libres. And these towns, you know, at some point they engulf a bit of a city, truly play a key part to their identity and some of their grassroots movements as a way to not only continue their legacies in Paraguay, but also just ensure that their past and their successes and accomplishments are also discussed within their community. So that's the Cambacua. They are, you know, as I'd mentioned before, they do have their annual festival. They're actually planning it at the moment because it's right around the corner, since we're already in December. And they play a key and integral part in this festival every single year.
Fascinating. And we hope to learn more about this in the future, since you said the festival's coming up in January. We're speaking with Valencia Wilson. She recently wrote a blog for Latin American Perspectives entitled Afrodescendientes in Paraguay, the 209-year struggle for recognition. This is the Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington. We're going to take a quick break right here. Back with more in a minute. Stay tuned.
Número 13 es el regimiento, esta mañana llegó a fortín en agua ese campamento. La muralla viva folleja. Natajupi mi mano a la visera, a tamboyo ya se embaraca a mí. Amongaray, onanagua, chinchera, taro pura hey, 13 tuyutí. A los pura heita, regimiento 13, nanagua de gloria, hielo vieja ite. Haití huirá y regimiento 7, la muralla viva, mopuajaré. Roatama, javite, salay, etepe, peteico, emero, ñeñandu, caro, que ya janga, orera, irepe, pedestal de gloria, oma, ejangua. Comando y rezaba al gendi, me brisuela, moco y me voy a llamar acá. Al león saqué y quiere cuera, mayor caballero, orero y ya. Cachorro de tigres, el cero, vero más hora, iré más y toye. Hoy me cuatía, ve 20 de enero, peneñón gatú, bembo japí. Cuando pu modelore pope tuyo tío nerera mita y puertala pino cuete huira jaibi tu oñe su pejeva orero basa o casa ya ve o maje ya ve 20 de enero y coeja a la viernero basi o jua iba cue a sangre y fuego hoy que pavo a peña bolimembi. Hija, espérame y por piedra suba regimiento 13, cabe su coche. Cunte que imo anera caello, pero oye, juta, ave, pide perení. Oye, pollo, ca, gringo, tuya, viro, nanaguaro, que me oyo, soy ti. Tuve tapo y te peo la victoria, regimiento 13, opucabo y mi coan, y que tu maje y la historia, no vamos a hijarras a guaraní.
That was Francisco Russo, and you're listening to Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington. Reminding everyone that you check us out on our own website, which is latinomediacollective.com. You can also follow us on Twitter under the name at LMC underscore show. That is at LMC underscore show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez, and we're speaking about the Afro-Paraguayan community, one of the least known Afro-descendant communities in Latin America, and we're speaking with Valencia Wilson, who wrote an article for Latin American Perspectives entitled Afro-Descendientes in Paraguay, the 209-year struggle for recognition. So Valencia, we've covered on the Latino Media Collective other Afro-Latino communities in Latin America, and particularly in places like El Salvador, Argentina, and to a small degree, Uruguay as well. And one of the things that I've noticed about those communities was that there were racist laws in the books in those countries, especially in the early 19th and 20th century, where it sort of had the intent of either diluting or disconnecting people from their African roots. And some people in those countries don't even know that they have African roots sometimes. And I'm curious to know if you came across this situation or this challenge while doing your research in Paraguay as well.
I did. And when I had those discussions with the Afro-Paraguayan community, it was two things. As you mentioned, it would be those that had no idea that they had African roots. But then the other would be where you would downplay or you would minimize your Africanness or Afro-Paraguayanness or Blackness. We could use either of those three words in order to prevent from being racially discriminated against, any receive any sorts of prejudice and stigma. And that did, from my understanding and from my research, that played a huge part towards just, number one, understanding the dimensions of the Afro-Paraguayan community and also the challenges they face, but also just the self-acknowledgement that, yes, I do have African ancestry. But I think it also does speak to, if someone is also minimizing their or reducing their Africanness, then to me it also, there is something social and economic as well, that they understand what that means in the context of Paraguay. So, and that was one of the things that I do believe is consistent with the other areas that you mentioned, in Uruguay and Argentina, et cetera. And yes, it was and still is an issue in Paraguay.
And so, since we mentioned in the first half sort of the bizarre history and bizarre relationship that Paraguay has with the Afro-descendant community, in recent times, what are some of the primary challenges facing Afro-Paraguayans today due to the lack of recognition? There are a litany of problems here, but can you tell us a few that are of note here?
I think there are some similarities. Obviously, the primary challenges that were repeated that I completely understood is just the range goes from discrimination, just the denial of that Afro-Paraguayans actually exist. And it's interesting because when I had spoken with a few members of the community, they juxtaposed what we could use in the U.S., what African Americans face in the U.S., and they said, look, we're just trying to get our country to acknowledge that we exist, that we're actually here. So in addition to that, there's the cultural education. You know, I do firmly believe, and I do agree with them, that, you know, there needs to be an injection of what contribution that Afro-Paraguayans have had in the national context. But in formal education, it can't always come from just a community education if we're trying to improve society. And then we also discussed land rights and titling. And, you know, as a primary example, the National University in Asunción is actually on lands that were provided by El Supremo to former slaves. However, because there was no official titling of those lands to those Afro-Paraguayans, they constantly see much of their lands being bought. They're just completely disregarded. Their land rights and titling are completely disregarded. So, I mean, I think those would be the top three that were echoed and reiterated many times that I think are quite the most important when we discuss some of the primary challenges.
You know, it's interesting that we've gone this far into the discussion and not actually mention the size, numbers-wise, of this community in and of itself. Paraguay is not a big country population-wise. It's about 7 million people. And it's bizarre to me because I'm Salvadoran, and El Salvador has a population of 7 million with a fraction of the landmass that Paraguay has. And that sort of presents another problem where it sort of demonstrates why the lack of recognition in the country to begin with. So I guess what I'm asking here is that, to the best of your abilities, can you tell us one thing that you mentioned in your article, which is the GGEEC, I'm hoping I'm saying this right, and efforts over the years in trying to get a percentage or number with regards to the size of this community?
Sure. So what you mentioned was the DGEEC, and it's the Dirección General de la Estadística, Encuestas y Censos. Essentially what it is, it's a government body that governs national statistics, surveys, census, etc. And, you know, if we're talking about trying to provide surveys for a population that don't believe Afro-Paraguayans exist, they were trying to gather reliable data to see whether or not how many of Paraguayans self-identify as Afro-descendants. So the initial survey that they conducted was also jointly held by the Inter-American Foundation. They launched this household survey, and the survey suggested that 2% of the entire population was of Kamba descent. But after speaking, after my research and speaking with members of the community, there was strong rejection. We can say a strong rejection of that number. And you know, I believe it does depend on your faith, on how any national body of statistics carries out their household surveys. And that was the biggest criticism, that yes, they carried out the surveys, but the survey questions were poorly conducted. They didn't survey a broad enough population, and that the survey population that they did serve, like, they did not administer the survey in a way that the Afro-Paraguayans believed that they should have been conducted. So there was a true lack of confidence. And that's the best way I could say it, a true lack of confidence on how the survey was conducted, because they certainly felt that more than 2% of the population is of Kamba descent. But again, it goes back to whether or not an individual, number one, knows that they have African ancestry, or two, is willingly able and ready to suggest to a survey that they do have Kamba descent, or they do have African descent. So that's where the in my article that I had suggested that, you know, this is an issue, and perhaps because this was conducted in 2006 and 2007, we're in 2021 now. Perhaps it's time to conduct another survey, but evaluate what was some of the issues that they had previously at that time, to see if they can come with a number that has a bit more credibility in the eyes of the Afro-Paraguayan community.
It's astonishing that even when there's an effort being made to count this community and to give a percentage, it still can't be done properly in 2021. And it's also astounding that, you know, we have the running issue here of national recognition, because anyone who's listened to our Black Lives Matter in Latin America series last year, that was sort of the running theme, national recognition. Even in a country like Colombia, for example, which has a huge Afro-descendant community population-wise, even though they have large organizations and have to some degree a voice in the national landscape, they still have trouble with national recognition. Even in a country like Mexico, for example, which is estimated to have 1 million people of African descent, you wouldn't know that by looking at Mexican media, you know, whether it be in news or entertainment or what have you. And it goes to what many Afro-descendant guests have told me last year, was the importance of oral traditions and passing oral traditions, whether it be music or dance or just history. And it seems like that's precisely the case in Paraguay. How that looks in Paraguay is what I want to ask you here, because how does the importance of oral traditions along with music, you know, help fill the void that's lacking or left behind because of a lack of national recognition?
Absolutely. It's extremely important. And, you know, today that is, it certainly, thanks to these oral traditions, you know, as we speak of numerous Latin American countries, but in particular the Afro-descendant communities in Paraguay, you know, it allows them to just claim their roots and their belonging. And these oral traditions, often they're the ones that provide the education that the formal educational system doesn't. And this public education of history, culture, and tradition, they wouldn't receive it anywhere else. So many of the times it is these Kambakua and Afro-Paraguayans having, from what I understood, was, you know, they could be meetings either biweekly, monthly, but quite frequently they are sharing these oral traditions and trying to at least start from the youth as well, and be able to communicate what they have provided within their own community, but also in Paraguay as well. So it's extremely important. And I think that these topics of oral traditions, not only in Paraguay, they extend outside, as you mentioned before, not only from Paraguay, but other areas in Latin America. But yes, they're extremely important, particularly in Paraguay.
Thank you for saying that. This is precisely why we want you on the show here. This is precisely why we do these type of shows on the Latino Media Collective, because otherwise, you know, it would just be lost, as it has been already in Paraguay to a large degree. Even though the GGEEC made an effort, it just goes to show you that in the case of Paraguay, you know, grassroots efforts by the community itself is so important. And you also mentioned this towards the end of your article, sort of the importance of younger Black activists in Paraguay leading this effort to keep traditions alive, get national recognition, and maybe to some degree, you know, put a number to this community, correct?
Correct. And I also want to add that, you know, if we are talking about this recognition process for those, if we were to put ourselves in someone else's shoes that might have, and this was also suggested by the community there, where they might have, you could say an inkling, or they might have a hunch that they do have African ancestry, these oral traditions are important, because these communities, they do have these member meetings or these charlas. And I think providing a safe space for someone to inquire, for someone to better understand what the community is about is equally important. And I do believe that is one of the strengths of these oral traditions and these communities that emphasize that. So that's also one thing that I do believe is important to note, because safe spaces are also extremely important in the context of Paraguay.
It is important because, as we mentioned, Cambacua previously, anyone who Googles Afro-Paraguayans, that's the first thing that comes up. But at the same time, we don't want that to be a dead end. And so it's a shame that we can't have any more Afro-Paraguayan voices or stories circulated out there. We're trying to do our part by doing this program today, but there should be more. There definitely needs to be more, especially when we mentioned sort of the bizarre history earlier in the show and how unique it is and how Paraguay doesn't play by the rules as it pertains to race in this issue. So I guess this may be anecdotal, but I think it's worth mentioning as an example of younger Black activists leading grassroots efforts. Can you tell us about one of the people that you spoke with, I believe, Alma Areco?
Alma Areco, she's studying. She's actually very young. She's 25, and she's a young activist from Villeta, Paraguay. And if you were to, essentially from Asunción de Villeta, on a good day without traffic, about an hour and a half. On a bad day, it could be 2 hours. We all know traffic. But what she does is, you know, she recognizes the issues within the formal education program and is quite honestly very vocal and does her best to be able to amplify Afro-Paraguayan voices. She's part of an anti-racist collective, Voces Negras. She also has a YouTube channel and another collective called Camba Descendientes. And if you look at my article, I do provide links for that. But essentially, it is gathering those who are also activists. They might be involved with art. Others might be involved with dance. Others may be involved with education. But to unite under a common theme. And that is what she currently does, in addition to her studies, et cetera. So it's quite astonishing and amazing that you have someone who is 25, amongst others, but taking this upon their shoulders and trying to push and move these marginalized voices towards the center. And I think that is the most important part.
I'm glad that you mentioned where she's at right now, because you mentioned the three provinces where Afro-Paraguayans mainly live around. They're not that far from the capital city of Asunción, which to me is kind of strange that if they're that close to the capital, then you would assume that there would be more recognition if they're that close. It's not like they're way out in the western part of the country, which is least populated. So they're not that far from the capital. That's another head scratcher. And it just shows that Paraguay is not playing by the rules here when it comes to race.
Absolutely. It is quite, you know, I agree with you 100%. You know, Asunción is certainly the capital. It's the business driver, the economic driver of the country. And 2 hours, you know, right outside of the capital, I mean, we could easily use it as a suburb, for example. And having this much resistance towards this, it's astonishing. But I also think it's an opportunity for others to lend them a hand and to elevate their voices so that they can be heard, because clearly they're not being heard.
Correct. So we have about 5 minutes here, and we did a show a few weeks ago about the Garifunas in Honduras. And the guest that we had there at the time also mentioned the importance of oral traditions as far as keeping, you know, alive the memory and the history of these communities. And I'll reiterate what I said on that show here, is that, you know, non-Afro-descendant Latinos such as myself also need to do their part in keeping the history and the traditions alive, especially with the modern means of communications that we have. We need to do our part to keep this history alive, because Afro-Paraguayan history is Latin American history. We haven't said it, but that should be stressed. And if people take anything away from this conversation, it's that, no matter how small the community may be. So this is what I take from this conversation, and also what I took from your article, which, by the way, we're going to create a link to your article on our Twitter account as well. But we have about 5 minutes left. What else do you hope people learn from this conversation here? And also, you know, where else can people go to learn more about this community? Because, again, this is this is probably one of the few shows I've done where I'm like flying blind, but I'm curious to know, where else can people learn about this community?
Absolutely. And I think, so I'll address one portion of the question, which I think legally is important, is that, you know, I wrote this article a year ago, and based off of this past October, this bill was submitted. It went through all of the committees for recognition of Afro-Paraguayans, and it was ultimately rejected by the Senate in October of this past year. And essentially, they have to start all over again. And assuming they would include some modifications or some opinions, socialize the law again, and work through this process yet again, and we all know legal processes are exhaustively long, I think one thing that those of us who are interested or want to gain a bit more knowledge about what they're facing is to certainly look at the current status of the law and see how Congress actually approaches this issue. Second, I believe that the best way to be able to support them and to be able to find out more is through the Camba Descendientes, and I could provide you the information. They do have, again, she's a young activist. They only have a certain amount of finances, but they do their best to be able to outline and provide information on the current stages of not only the laws, but some of the issues they're facing. In addition to that, Red Afro-Paraguaya is also on the front line, and certainly are the ones that are trying to push essentially the populace and push this bill forward. So, you know, I hope that, you know, this article that I had written provides more general awareness of Afro-Paraguay or of Afro-Latino communities that do need additional support, but additional advocacy, so that they do have that influential authority to get their laws passed through Congress, but ultimately provide the recognition that they deserve, quite honestly. So that is what I hope that those of us that are interested in bringing marginalized voices to the center can gain from this article.
You certainly have with your article. And one last thing, where can people find you on social media?
Sure. So the easiest way is I do post my articles on Twitter. And my Twitter handle is Latam Koyos. That is LATAM KOIOS. And I believe that there will be additional information coming out soon. So I do my best to not only post about Barawai, but other issues as well. So that's where you're able to find me and subscribe and be up to date on some of these issues that are important in some of these marginalized communities.
Fantastic. We've been speaking with Valencia Wilson. Her article in Latin American Perspectives is entitled Afrodescendientes in Paraguay, the 209-year struggle for recognition. We're going to create a link to this article on our Twitter account because people should learn more about this community. In the meantime, Valencia Wilson, thank you very much for being on the show with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was fun. It was great talking to you.
Absolutely. And with that said, that is it for today's show. We want to remind everyone that you can check us out on our website, which is latinomediacollective.com. You can follow us on Twitter under the name at LMC_show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. So on behalf of my co-producer, Abby Roberts, this is Oscar Fernandez saying thank you very much, everyone, for listening to the show. That's it for today's show. Adios. Nos vemos. Ciao. We'll be right back.